Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopijana Malaba Kiribadhahuti Gopijana Malaba Kiribadhahuti Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunjavi Halti Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunjavi Halti Gopijana Balaba Iribaru Dhaguti Gopijana Balaba Iribaru Dhaguti Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunjabi Haruti Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunjabi Haruti Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidakacharya Also Tata Siddhishi Shimad His Divine Grace of Ayachalana, the Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Kijai, Namacharya Srila Huilas Thakur Kijai, Premse Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopa Govinda Sayamkun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagadatha Sami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Lassi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaura Premananda Hari Hari Bol All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. So Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Sri Guru Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, we will continue with our reading of the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. And here we go. We're continuing with text 31. So this is a very exciting chapter, as is the whole Bhagavad Gita, exciting. And if we go over the Bhagavad Gita like this, you will know the Bhagavad Gita very well by the time we're finished. At least the context of each and every verse. Context means where each and every verse is and how it fits into the general flow of the teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. Here we go. Ye me matamidham nityam anutishtanti manavaha shatavanto nusuyanto muchante te pi karma bhihi. Yea, those who my, matam injunctions, idam, these, nityam, as an eternal function, out of tishthanti, execute regularly, manavaha, human beings, shadha, vanta, with faith and devotion, anasuyantaha, without envy, muchante, become free, te, all of them, api, even, karma vihi, from the bondage of the law of fruit of actions. So translation, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Notice how Krishna is continually using the word envy there, which is interesting. The injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom, and therefore is eternally true without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so the truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruit of action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, actually we read that yesterday. That's right. Actually, we should go ahead. I think it was 35 is the next one. Sorry about that. Let us go ahead. Yep. Sorry about that. Just looking at yesterday's notes. Okay. I also read that. You read that? Okay. 36. Sorry. Arjuna vacha atakena paryukto yam. Papam charati purushaha anicham api varshneya balad hiva niyojataha. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna said, ata, then, kena, by what? This is a very important verse. Prayuktaha, impelled, I am one, papam sins, charati does, purushaha, a man, anichan, without desiring, api, although varshneya, O descendant of Vrishni, balat, by force, eva, as if, niyojitaha, engaged. Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Now, this is an extremely important question because sometimes we find ourselves forced to do something. A living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme, is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation and sometimes even against his will. Wow. As such, Arjuna's question to Krishna is very sanguine as to the perverted nature of the living entities. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the supersoul within, but are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse. So, you know, if you just take this verse separate from the other verses, you'll think the person who acts sinfully is not really responsible. He's forced to act. Or as the Christians say, the devil made me do it. Or as we say, Maya made me do it, or illusion made me do it, or Krishna made me do it. Actually, that's a pretty good excuse, but it doesn't hold up for reasons which we're going to speak about in a second. Text 37, so here is the answer. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kama Esha Kura Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashano Maha Papma Vidyanam Iha Vairinam. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the personality of God, has said, Kamaha, lust, Esha this, Krodha, wrath, Esha this, Rajaguna, the mode of passion, Samudbhavaha, born of, Maha Ashanaha, all-devouring, Maha Papma, greatly sinful, Vidhi no, Inam this, Iha, in the material world, Vairinam, greatest enemy. Translation, the Supreme Personality of God has said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So in other words, one may say, well, it wasn't Maya, it wasn't Krishna, but it was lust that made me do it. Well, the point is, if you're cultivating the lower modes of nature and contemplating things in the lower modes of nature, as we learned in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Jayato Vishyakpumsav Sangos Tesha Pajayate, then it'll force you to act. So you have to be able to cut things out, or cut actions out, in the initial stage. Initial stage is like, we get three stage: thinking, feeling, willing. So if you can stop the action or stop the thought processes in the first stage, then it won't get to the second stage. Once it's in the second stage, it's pretty much a done deal. For example, okay, let's say you have some particular food that is your favorite. I don't know what your favorite is. For me, it's quinoa. Someone will say, that's really austere. So anyway, but it used to be pizza, like everybody else's favorite food, before I became an atheistic vegan. So it used to be pizza. So let's say that's my favorite food. So then I start to contemplate it and I talk about it. Because when you talk about something, you're contemplating it. And when you contemplate something, you get attached to it, according to Krishna in the Gita. So when you contemplate something that is passionate, let's take a romance, for example. Let's say you read a romantic novel. Let me turn off my...
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Whoops, there's my Google. I have so much electronics here that they talk back to me sometimes. It's actually better association than most people. So let's say you're reading a romantic novel.
Here's your most recent...
Oh my God, there's my other...
Accessibility.
There's my other... my other electronic device talking. It's actually embarrassing. So let's say you're contemplating a romantic novel and you read about... Juliet, Romeo and Juliet. Well, that's a kind of depressing novel. Let's say you read something that's actually romantic. Then you contemplate that. You contemplate it, and then it puts you in the mode of passion, because romance is in the mode of passion. Later on, gets transformed to the mode of ignorance. That's the way passion is. Your passion. And you read it, you contemplate it, and then you're confronted with an object that you could get passionate about, and then you succumb to it because your mind is contemplating it. And that's what it says here. It is lust only which is born of contact, with the material mode of passion. So when you contact with the mode of passion, the desire to enjoy someone or something, it gets a hold of you and you lose control of yourself. And you're sorry for what you did the next day or the next week. So one has to cut the thought out. To control the mind, you have to cut it out before you start to think about it. Or even if there's the hint that you're going to think about it. So how do you cut it out? That is very difficult. If I tell you, or if you tell your mind, not to think of something, you actually think of it even more. In some of my courses, I tell people, don't think of a pink elephant taking a bath. Don't think of it. I order you not to think of it. And the more you try not to think of it, I mean, even as I'm talking about it, I'm picturing in my mind a pink elephant from Walt Disney taking a bath. And I can't get it out of my mind. And even though I'm trying to give a class, I can't get it out of my mind. So the whole point is that when some beginning thought arises, instead of obsessing on it. So, you know, we all have this tendency to be obsessive, but not in a clinical sense. You know, I'm not talking about us being obsessive with things, but obsessive in the sense that we think of something, oh yes, it's bad, it's really bad, or this is good, it's really important, it must happen, oh yes, 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 or no, 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 or I hate this person, I really hate this person, I super hate this person, I can't stand this person. I mean, how often do we obsess about things like that? So this obsession has to be stopped before it becomes an obsession. Okay. Like when you see the enemy coming, you take shelter. That's all. It was like in the old days during when I was young, we were afraid of an atomic attack coming from Russia. So we'd have these regular drills in school and bomb shelter drills or whatever, where we would all the bells would ring, okay, this is a drill, everybody get to the center of the class where there's no windows, or, you know, the hall where there's no windows. Put your head against the wall and chant Hare Krishna. No, they didn't say that. Put your head against the wall, and then a few minutes later, ding, this was only a test of the emergency warning system. Anyway, so it's like that. When we see a potential danger or something that we can contemplate or something that would cause us to lose our mind or something that would take us into the mode of passion, don't think about it. Because once you start feeling, okay, let's talk about feeling. Feeling means, let's say, talk about the pizza thing again. Let's say you think of pizza and then automatically there's this Pavlovian response. What do I mean by Pavlovian response? Well, there was this guy called Pavlov who used to train dogs. And every time he fed the dog, he gave them, he rang a bell. Okay. And so they connected the bell ringing with the feeding. So then he stopped feeding and he rang the bell and they still salivated. So you actually see that when you contemplate some food. Let's take food because that's an easy thing and it doesn't embarrass anybody. So when you take some food and you contemplate the food you really like, you actually can feel the saliva in your mouth start to be excreted. Not from the mouth, but inside the mouth. And that's contemplation. And so you actually have some, like, either subtle or beginning gross feelings towards that particular sense object. And when one reaches the contemplation status, there's every chance it's all downhill from that then, and you do something you shouldn't have done. Or if one's addicted to cigarettes, or one's addicted to something. The whole idea is not to contemplate it. Okay, thinking, feeling, willing, remember that. So you have control at the beginning stage. So you are responsible if you succumb to lust because you didn't take care of it when it started. Where it's like a fire. Lust is sometimes compared to a fire. Let's say you have a little fire somewhere and you're afraid that it's going to spread. So it's better to put out a fire right away before it spreads. And it's a lot easier. Once the fire has engulfed your house is finished. I mean, you can't control it. But when the fire is very small, it's very easy. You just throw a glass of water on top of it or cover it if it happens to be, you know, gasoline fire or something like that. You cover it and the fire is gone. Once it's big, you can't control. You're forced to act. So you have to get it at the beginning stage. Otherwise, even a man of intelligence or a woman of intelligence, a person of intelligence, can be overcome by the desire to do something. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns to wrath. That's the same quote from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When you contemplate sense objects, you get attached to them, then you get lusty, and then you get angry. Anger and wrath are the same thing, at least when I last checked. And then wrath is transformed. So that's the Bhagavad Gita verse. Then you get wrath, and then you get illusion. Illusion continues, then loses his memory, loses intelligence, and one falls down the material existence. That's a paraphrase of the Bhagavad Gita verse. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. Like I said, lust turns to wrath, so you get passion and ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries, things related to them. If, therefore, the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. So you can elevate the mode of passion in a way of engaging your desires in Krishna's service. For example, we are passionately want to eat, so we passionately eat prasadam. Or, let's say we're a very passionate person, so you chant Hare Krishna very passionately, you know, with intensity. So in this way you can engage your passion. Or you want to engage in loving exchanges with another living entity, you know, the sexual relationship, then you engage that in the proper way, in Krishna's service. Simple. And then it becomes purified. So there's a royal road, which Prabhupada described it. And also yesterday we were talking about dangers on the royal road. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss, and the living entities are parts and parcels of the spiritual bliss. So we are, in one sense, expansions of God. You know, tiny expansions, we call vibhinamsa, that means real tiny, just like a drop of water, in one sense, is like the expansion of the whole ocean. So the drop of water actually has its identity when it's in the ocean. Because that's the identity. Or the hand, the example the Prabhupada would give often with parts and parcels, is the hand has its enjoyment when it's connected to the body. It gets its nutrition, it gets everything from the rest of the body, and that's the nature of part and parcel, and which is what Krishna says we are. So we are a part and parcel of God. But right now, we are like the hand that doesn't cooperate with the rest of the body. You know, like a spastic hand. It's just doing its own thing, not very intelligent. And the hand is trying to eat by itself, which is kind of stupid. Instead of feeding the mouth, the hand is thinking, let me enjoy this food by squeezing this food. So this is what's happening now. Because of our connection with Krishna, the real enjoyment comes when the hand, or us, center and try to enjoy the person that we're part and parcel of. Part of Krishna. And Krishna's in our heart. Anyway, this material creation is created by the Lord to fulfill these lusts, and when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activity, the living entity begins to inquire about their real position. Baffled means that you have everything, or you've tried everything, life after life, as they say, been there, seen it, done it. And frustrated. What's going on? Tell me what life is all about. I remember my own history. Okay. So I tried a lot of things when I was young. And I never found any of them blissful. I mean, it was interesting doing something one time. After that, it was boring. Because I discovered the nature of that particular activity did not have any depth of enjoyment. It was very shallow. It's like diving into a swimming pool that only has 2 inches of water. I mean, you can splash, but you're certainly not gonna have a good time. So that's like the material world. So I'll give you one example. Before I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, I thought, you know, actually the real culture, real understanding of life, and real enjoyment is not in this country. It's in Europe. So I hopped on a plane, more than hop on a plane, but anyway, I did hop on a plane to a place called Luxembourg, because there were cheap flights to Luxembourg from the Bahamas. That's another story. So I hopped on a flight to Luxembourg, arrived there, and took some trains and went to France. I thought, you know, French, you know, they have culture. Everything is nice in Europe. You know, America is uncultured. And so what I discovered in France after about 5 days, that everybody was exactly the same as the United States, except they were doing things in a little bit different way. You know, they were eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's the four animal propensities. And they were doing it through a different cultural expression, through different cultural expressions. That's it. Wasn't anything more than that. You know, the naked face of reality was revealed to me. So I remember what I did is, after a few days in Europe and France and looking for some like higher truths, you know, people go to Europe and they think the higher truth is the Big Ben or the changing of the guards or the Eiffel Tower in France and Paris. And so I remember I took a train to Marseille, which is in southern France, and it was the middle of the night. And I was just walking in the square, the town square, and thinking, this is the same as everything's the same. There's no enjoyment. And at that time, I didn't know about Krishna, or at least in this life, I didn't know about Krishna. So I just basically said, what am I going to do? So a few days later, I flew back to the United States. And I was thinking, what am I going to do? Well, let me enjoy in the Bahamas and go to the Bahamas and meditate and chant Om. So I hopped on a private plane, our own plane, and landed on a deserted island, basically a part of a deserted island. Some of the people on the other part of the island, it's called Grand Abaco in the Bahamas. And I had this beautiful beach all to myself. And there was a house there that I had arranged on that beach, and nobody was around for like 30 miles. It wasn't another person, another soul. The beach was pink sand and clear water. I mean, it was just like paradise. You know, it was better than Hawaii. Sorry for those of you who are in Hawaii. And so I went there and thought, this is the life. I will meditate and understand reality and be happy. So the first day I went to go swimming, and there were these fins going across the water. I thought, oh my God, Krishna really smashed me. I thought, well, I can still meditate on the land. And then I heard the roar of boars. That means giant pigs with tusks on them. And I thought, uh-oh, not for me. So basically everything I tried, either I got fried out doing, frustrated doing, bored with doing it. And so then I said, God, please. I mean, actually, this is my prayer, that God, please show me what you want me to do. Please let me do your will. Please. That was my mantra. I was actually chanting this. And then all of a sudden, there's Prabhupada. So it says that by the mercy of Krishna, one gets the spiritual master. So when one is ready, Krishna sends the spiritual master, and not until then. So you may say, what about all these places in the world where there's no guru? And actually, if anyone can go on the internet and find transcendental sound vibration. That's no excuse now, maybe except for North Korea. So, because people have to be ready. People have to be ready for it, then Krishna arranges something for them. So that's the point. Brahmanda Brahmate Konna Bhagyuan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Bish. The living entity is wandering, and by the mercy of Krishna, he meets Guru. Guru gives him the seed of the creeper of devotion. And then he cultivates that creeper of devotion. That creeper of devotion grows higher and higher and higher and pierces the covering of the material world and goes to Krishna's lotus feet and drops some nice flowers at Krishna's lotus feet. So this is the inquiry. So Prabhupada said this inquiry, when one's ready, is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, where it says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Means now is the time to start to look for the meaning of life, or one should inquire into the Supreme, which is how Prabhupada talks about one should inquire about spirituality. And the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam, and also the same statement is there in the, I'm purporting what Prabhupada is saying, in the Vedanta Sutras, Janmadhyasya Yato Anvayad Itaratash Cha, or the origin of everything is Krishna, the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also there in the Supreme. Wow. But the origin of lust in the Supreme is actually love, and the love becomes pervertedly reflected within the atmosphere of selfishness. What we take for love in this world is oftentimes selfishness using the other person or even an animal to satisfy our own desires. Try to understand that. And I give that typical example of this book called The Metamorphosis. This is a book written by Kafka, and it shows how a person, it was actually interesting, a person changed his body, became a cockroach, and his whole family let him die. I'm not going to tell the whole story right now. So love means to care for someone regardless of the situation, regardless of whether they please your senses. And of course, the last verse of Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashika really clarifies this to the highest degree. And that last verse states that Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You're completely free to do anything and everything, and you will always remain my Lord unconditionally. Because that's love. And Krishna will never do anything bad to you. Krishna will always do good things for you. I mean, that's our trust. That whatever Krishna does, it's for our own good. Lust is transformed to love for the Supreme, or transformed to Krishna consciousness. Or in other words, desiring everything for Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravan. But by doing so, he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Pretty good. So he was carrying out the mission of the Lord, and he was angry at Ravan because Ravan had kidnapped Sita Devi. Here also in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. So here's an example of lust. Well, I mean, it was Krishna's pastimes, okay. But it was to deal with Arjuna. So Arjuna falls in love with Krishna's sister, Subhadra. Subhadra falls in love with Arjuna. Okay? But because it was Krishna's desire, then their love was part of Krishna's pastimes. What happened is that Subhadra was supposed to be getting married by the arrangement of her other brother, Balaram. And we love Balaram, but Balaram sometimes opposes Krishna. By the arrangement of Balaram, she was supposed to get married to Duryodhana, the bad guy in the Mahabharata. And Krishna wanted Arjuna to marry Subhadra, the good guy, or one of the good guys. And so Krishna arranged for Arjuna to literally sweep Subhadra off her feet and put her in a chariot. And he had Subhadra, that is Arjuna, had Subhadra drive the chariot. And guess who the chariot belonged to? The chariot belonged to Krishna. Because Arjuna at that particular juncture was taking a vow of renunciation, which he wasn't too good at. He was taking a vow of renunciation, so at that point he didn't have his chariot, so he had to borrow Krishna's chariot. And it was so romantic. I mean, talk about a romantic thing. And that was Krishna's service. So romance can be engaged in Krishna's service. Not for sannyasi, of course, but can be engaged in Krishna's service. Appropriately, these things can be engaged. I mean, Krishna later on, the Gita says, Kamo Asmi. I am sex life that is according to his service. So that's how one overcomes mundane lust. Or mundane anger. So next verse. Dumendriya vriyate vaniryata darsho malena cha yatholvena vrito garbas tata dinedam avritam. Dumena by smoke. Vriyate is covered. Vani fire yata just as. Adarshaha mira. Malena by dust. Cha also yata just as. Ulbena by the womb. Avritaha is covered, garba, embryo, tata, so, tena, by that lust, idam, this, avritam is covered. So another important verse, as fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. So in other words, lust doesn't come in just one degree, one flavor. It's either a little bit, a little bit more, a lot more, and complete covering. And we've seen people like that. Just look, the face is the mirror of the mind, or the eyes are the mirror of the mind. And you can just see when someone looks lusty, it's just, oh my God, he looks like a tiger ready to pounce. And he becomes covered up just like a tiger. So, these are the different degrees. There are three degrees of covering by which, of the living entity, by which his pure consciousness is obscured. So we're talking about covering. The pure consciousness is there, but it's covered. Like a light can be covered by different filters, or it can be completely shut off by an opaque filter. This covering is but lust under different manifestations, like smoke in the fire, dust on the mirror, and the womb about the embryo. When lust is compared to smoke, it's understood that the fire, the living spark, can be a little perceived. It's like the mode of goodness. In other words, when the living entity exhibits his Krishna consciousness slightly, he may be likened to the fire covered by smoke. Although fire is necessary when there is smoke, there is no overt manifestation of fire in the early stage. This stage is like the beginning of Krishna consciousness. You know, this is a mixed. The dust on the mirror refers to the cleansing process of the mirror of the mind by so many spiritual methods. The best process is to chant the holy names of the Lord. The embryo covered by the womb is an analogy illustrating a helpless position, for the child in the womb is so helpless he cannot even move. This stage of living condition can be compared to that of the trees. The trees are also living entities, but they've been put into such a condition of life by such a great exhibition of lust that they are almost devoid of consciousness. The covered mirror is compared to the birds and beasts, and the smoke-covered fire is compared to the human being. So there's different analogical comparisons in this particular verse, depending upon how one approaches Krishna consciousness, what stage one approaches Krishna consciousness, or what species one is in, or basically how one, even in a particular species, succumbs is covered by lust. In the form of a human being, the living entity may revive a little Krishna consciousness, and if he makes further development, the fire of spiritual life can be kindled in the human form of life. By careful handling of the smoke and the fire, fire can be made to blaze. Therefore, the human form of life is a chance for the living entity to escape the entanglement of material existence in the human form of life. One can conquer the enemy lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. And becoming Krishna conscious and not controlling the lust or not following the regulative principles is like trying to light a fire and pouring water on at the same time. Or trying to light a fire with wet wood. Very difficult, I can tell you that. One time, a funny story we experience we had in Govardhan. One time we were arranging for a fire sacrifice for someone's marriage. Okay. And we gathered some wood and we tried to light it. And then we tried to light it again. And some of the residents there, they were laughing at us. Can't light a fire. And finally, they brought us some dry wood and we were able to light the fire. And I said to the couple that this indicates that your marriage will have a difficult beginning, but ultimately it will be successful. And that was the case. So anyway, so one's going to light a fire. One should light a fire with dry wood, not wet wood. So if you want to make rapid spiritual progress, don't be throwing water on top of your, you know, proverbial water or lustful activities on top of your Krishna consciousness. You'll go faster. I mean, why shouldn't you want to go fast? Usually when I drive a vehicle, I want to go fast. Or as fast as the speed limit will allow me. So, next text is another important text that we remember. Arvatam gyaname tena yanino nishabhayana kamarupena kuntia dushprena analena cha. Arvatam covered yanam, pure consciousness, etena by this, Gani Naha of the knower, Nitya Vairana by the eternal enemy, Kama Rupena in the form of lust, Kontiya, son of Kunti, Dushparena, never to be satisfied, Analena by the fire cha also. Thus the living entities, the wise living entities, pure consciousness, become covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Again, that example, the more gasoline you put on the fire, the more it becomes inflamed. You just can't satisfy it. The more you have, the more you want. And it just goes on like a vicious circle like that. So better not to contemplate sense objects, and that way you'll be peaceful, because without peace you cannot be happy. Lust doesn't make you happy. It makes you think happiness is just now coming. It's like the proverbial donkey with a carrot in front of him. You're thinking, just now, make this little adjustment, get that person, and I will be happy. And it doesn't work like that. First of all, if one's not Krishna conscious, whatever happiness you're meant to have, that's your karma. You're going to have it whether you go to this country, that country, you marry this person, that person, the happiness is fixed. And your life is fixed too. If you're Krishna conscious, you become happier by giving up lust. Simple thing. And not simply giving up lust, but loving Krishna. Chanting Krishna's name. It's such a blissful process. I mean, I'm up early in the morning chanting Krishna's name, and it's just like, wow. I'm addicted to doing that. So, purport, it says in the Manu Sangita that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment, just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. In the material world, the center of all activities is sex. And thus, as material world is called, Maitunya Agara, or the shackles of sex life. In the ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled by sex life. Now, as I mentioned before, sex life can be used in Krishna service. We're not denying it. We're not against it. But to simply, for that to be the be-all and end-all of your existence, and the reason, and actually that is the be-all and end-all of material existence. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of material existence of any living entity. Therefore, this lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. Again, lust means to take someone as an object of enjoyment, not as an object of service or pleasing, but this person is meant for my enjoyment. I like the way he or she looks. Really? That's okay. But you're taking that person for your enjoyment. You're not thinking, can I help this person? Can I serve this person? You're thinking, I want to enjoy this person. just like I like to enjoy computers and electronic gadgets and all that other wonderful stuff. So people want to enjoy other people or animals too. You know, and, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't love animals. I love animals. I mean, just today I was walking outside and I saw these beautiful little squirrels with a big furry tail. And I was thinking, boy, I hope he comes up to me so I can pet him. Of course, that would have been a disaster. I'd probably get bit by him. So, because I'm thinking of enjoying his fur, you know, petting his fur, you know, like that. It's a natural human response. But I'm not thinking of what's good for him. Because actually what's good for that squirrel is if I start to touch him and he doesn't bite me, then that squirrel will be contaminated by the touch of a human being. And perhaps other squirrels may not like that. Or, on the other hand, perhaps he will let down his guard with other human beings who may not be as friendly as I am. So I'm actually thinking of using that squirrel for my enjoyment instead of doing the best thing for the squirrel. Best thing for the squirrel is he doesn't hang around me. Or that the squirrel gets prashadam. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there's some feeling of happiness, but actually the so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer because it's bewildering, and after that, there's a letdown. Oh. There's a letdown the morning after or getting bitten by the squirrel. So here we go. This is also every verse is important. Indriyani manobudhir astyadhishtanam uchite etarimo hayat yesha gyanam avrita dehinam indriyani, the senses, mana, the mind, buddhi, the intelligence, ashila of this lust. Adhishtanam, sitting place, uchite is called, etai, by all these, vimohayati, bewilders, esha, this lust, jnanam, knowledge, avrita, covering, dehinam, of the embodied, that means us, we're embodied. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Though the lust covers the real knowledge of the living, through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders them. Obviously, the senses, desiring sense objects, the mind, thinking, feeling, willing, accepting, rejecting, which we talked about yesterday, and the intelligence, making plans, are the factors or where the lust resides. And you can turn it around by first of all fixing the intelligence in doing the right thing according to your ultimate self-interest. When we're talking about the right thing, it's not that the right thing that someone just decided because they want to control your life, but the right thing in terms of what's best for you. The thing is, what's best for serving Krishna is also the best for me. That's pretty cool, isn't it? But we think it's not. We think what's best for Krishna is good for him, you know, I'm supposed to love him, but, you know, for me, you know, I got other plans in life here. Other plans, other needs in life, etc. So, one should understand that senses, five senses, pancha indriya, the mind, of course I'm pointing to the brain, which is not the mind. The brain is a mechanical machine, not exactly mechanical, biological machine. And the intelligence, the way to discriminate. Intelligence is the question of discriminating. What is your goal in life? And so, of course, the intelligence gets covered when there's lust. Purport, the enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. So it's like a war. And therefore, Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. So in other words, it begins with hearing. You hear about how wonderful, for example, one may hear about how wonderful Hawaii is, and you just get all sorts of ideas and you plan how to go there. Nothing wrong with going there, but I'm just saying it's based upon you, which doesn't really give you happiness. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego. False ego means Basically, I'm the controller, I am mine. I can own things, possess things, and also I'm the center. And the real ego is a real ego. It's not that you get rid of the ego completely. The real ego is that Krishna's the center, and Krishna owns everything. Ishvasham idam sarvam. And identify itself with matter. And thus, with the mind and senses, the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes, this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, 84th chapter, 13th verse. Yashatmabuddhi kunape tritadake swati kalatradi shubhomijati yathirtabuddhi salena karita janesu avigeshu sa eva gokara. The human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable and goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath, rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Nothing wrong with an ass or a cow. But you're a human being. You have more propensities, more abilities than an ass or a cow. I mean, cow is sacred, but you certainly don't want to have the consciousness of a cow. You want to have a consciousness of a human being who can discriminate and know what's best for yourself. Okay, so we will end here. This is text 41. And we'll start in text 41. Tomorrow, there was another thing I think I wanted to talk about in regard to the last verse. False identification of the spirit soul is very nicely. I guess that was it. It's false identification. Anyway, so tomorrow we'll start with text 41. How about that? And now I just want to say a few words. And then we'll take questions after that. So here's a few words from me. I was talking to someone today about the coronavirus. Give you a little background here. And their mentality was, I was saying, you got to take precaution, because this person had actually been in a program with like 35 people crammed into a little space. I'm not going to say where. And I said, you got to take precautions. But the mentality was that if Krishna wants you to die, you will die. Now, that appears to be theistic, but it's not really that way. Because Krishna explains that actually there's different factors in action. In the Gita, he describes this. And he controls one of the factors. He's called the super soul. But, you know, the place, the action, the doer, etc., like that. These are all controlled by us. So we can take precautions. For example, you know, in ordinary dealings, we have to use common sense. Like I can jump off of a balcony and say, if Krishna wants me to die, I'll die. And if Krishna wants, I'll fly, I'll fly. Or I can be driving my car and not wear seatbelts, you know. And it's a proven fact, due to statistics, that if one is not wearing a seatbelt, they're more likely to die or get seriously injured in an accident. I mean, you would say, Krishna's going to protect me. But Krishna gave you the seatbelts. Krishna gave you the intelligence. There's that story Prabhupada told, I might have told it before online, where Prabhupada said this man who thought always Krishna was going to protect him. And what happened is that he was in a house and there was a flood and the water was rising and it went up to his doorstep and the government sent a boat and they said, please hop in the boat because the water's going to rise pretty high. You're right on the border of the Mississippi River. So the water kept rising. He said, no, God will always protect me. If God wants me to die, I'll die. And so then, water, 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 went up to the roof. And the government sent a helicopter to lower the rope, you know, grab onto the rope. He says, no, if God wants me to die, I will die. This is a story told by Prabhupada. I mean, I changed a few little details. And then so they said, all right, hasta la vista, señor. And so the water kept rising higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And the guy died. He went to God after he died. And he said, God, what happened to your guarantee you were going to protect me? Did you want me to die? Is that really your plan? And God says, God Uvacha, that actually, I sinned. Didn't you fool, you stupid idiot? Didn't you see the boat I sent for you? Didn't you see the helicopter I sent for you? You're an idiot, God said to the man. So, in the same way, don't you see the masks that Krishna has sent for us? You may think, this is atheism, to actually think that the masks are coming because of some mask factory. They're coming because Krishna's made the arrangement for our protection. Practical. I know, obviously, he still may die in spite of all the precautions and the best doctors and the best masks and whatever like that. But Krishna sent things and given us the intelligence not to be face to face with people who are practically spitting in our faces. You know, so that's intelligence. It's intelligence. You do have some ability to make choices in this world. Otherwise, you'd say, you know, why should I do anything? If Krishna wants me to eat, he'll eat. You know, Krishna will cook for me. Why should I cook? Right? It's such an endeavor, cooking and cleaning the plates afterwards. If Krishna wants me to have a clean house, he'll clean the house for me. Right? So, if Krishna wants me to have running water, he'll give me running water. You could be an avaduta. But actually, that's not our path. So this it's a really important point, thing that many devotees are confused by, and many devotees just get too esoteric and spiritual and don't understand there is a material world, and they think Krishna is actually controlling. He is indirectly controlling things, yes, but he's arranged with his control that you have decision-making power. And you are responsible. You know, if you do some cruel act, let's say if I yell at a devotee, chastising a devotee, I can't tell the devotee, and I know I did the wrong thing afterwards, I can't say, Krishna made me do it. You know, if Krishna wanted you to be yelled at, he arranged it. If Krishna wanted me to speak nicely, Krishna would arrange that too. No, I'm responsible. I'm responsible for protecting myself. So we're given intelligence with this coronavirus and with other things like that, how to protect ourselves to the best of our ability. And we should take advantage of that. I mean, it's just so much common sense. It's just like people somehow have lost the common sense. Not everybody, of course, but many spiritualists have lost their common sense, unfortunately. So, on that happy note, I will open this up for questions. Give me 1 second, and I will allow you to unmute yourselves. I am the supreme controller of Zoom. So, who wants to ask a question about anything we just read in the Gita, or what I just talked about with protecting oneself? Please protect yourselves. Really, you know, just today another devotee passed away. He was a nice Russian devotee who was doing translation work for Bibi Govinda Maharaj, and he just passed away due to the virus. And in the UK, so many devotees passed away and got the virus. So please take precautions. Sumuk, okay, you have another question. It's good to see you. And in Hasmukh's factory. So ask your question. You have to unmute yourself first. Go to the... Yeah, that's good.
Yes. Thank you, Gurudev. The question is... We always, you know, you're talking about lust here in this in this chapter 3 of Karma Yoga. This is the same topic here. Sometimes, there's some, all the mind is always thinking that there is no enjoyment in the material world. The mind keeps thinking, if you get fed up again, it will say, okay, there is little enjoyment. The mind keeps thinking like that, how will we get rid of the thing?
How do we? Well, I think you got to have a higher taste. Raso Varja, Braso Pyasa Param Jishtanibhati. When you're having more enjoyment doing something else, then you give up the idea that there's enjoyment in this world. And there is. There is enjoyment in this world, but it's like a drop of water compared to the ocean of material enjoyment. It's basically insignificant. And oftentimes I've described the enjoyment in this world as being the cessation of some particular imbalance. Like enjoying eating is a cessation of the hunger. And, the sex desire too, when one engages in sex, it's one has this sexual impulse and then there's a cessation of it for some time. And so it's like that. If one is not, let's say, having intense desire, then basically nothing is enjoyable in this world except for Krishna. And to enjoy this world, you have to have an intense desire to enjoy something. In other words, the desire is the harassing factor. It's like, someone who keeps harassing you, keeps talking to you, na or nagging. I like the word nagging because my mother used to nag me all the time. So anyway, so this is the point. One has to see like that, and you have to have a higher pleasure, a higher taste. I mean, I'm enjoying life where it is right now, and I don't want anything that takes me away from that enjoyment. And I've been enjoying since 1971, Krishna consciousness. Why do you want to make me miserable? If someone says, why don't you do something fun? And I'm thinking, why do you want to make me miserable? It's not that I'm just like brainwashed, but it's just like my experiences. Just like, at one point is when I travel, people want to take me places for, clean enjoyment. They want to take me sightseeing. And I'm thinking, what's the enjoyment of that? I mean, it's not that I'm brainwashed, it's just that I don't get any pleasure out of those things. It's because it's been there, seen it, done it. You've seen one building, you've seen all the buildings. Course, Fiji is nice. Fiji is paradise. When I was last in Fiji, Tsumuka's from Fiji, in case you can't happen to figure that out. When I was last in Fiji, I was trapped for 2 weeks in a place called Naisoso. Went on a beach in a, private house, on a private beach, and everything like that. But it got really boring after a while. It was nice. It was a perfect environment, people serving me on the beach. And, when I go back, I'll go there again, but it's boring. And talking to people about Krishna never gets boring. Chanting Hare Krishna never gets boring. I mean, I basically had everything in this world. And it was all, I just didn't find it satisfying until I came to Prabhupada's lotus feet. Okay, so two other people are raising their hands. Please identify yourselves.
Hi, Gurudev.
Oh, Gopalji. With a nice picture of yourself as a young man.
Yeah. You don't want to see me now.
I remember that person.
I barely do. Can I ask a question from what you spoke about last night?
Yeah.
You were speaking about suppression and repression.
Yeah.
And suppression is something we're aware of, but repression is something that we're not aware of.
In the beginning we may be aware, in the beginning we may be aware of it, but we repress it to put it out of our minds, yes.
Yeah, or perhaps we may lie to ourselves and say, well, if I just do this or do that, then perhaps, I'll overcome it through transcendental meditation or neuro-linguistic programming, or even sometimes a false understanding of how to become Krishna conscious.
Yes.
So then later on, after doing all these things, it pops out. So then what to do when you find that you've been practicing Krishna consciousness, but not very well for a certain number of years, and then you go, oh, that was there, and I sort of hid from it, thinking it would get bored and go away and not try to eat me. And then here you are 20 years later, and you have to deal with whatever it is you repressed.
Remember a Jack in the Box?
Yes.
Yeah.
The most frightening so-called toy to have ever been invented. By a sadist.
Yeah, actually, the children cry when they see it.
Yeah, it's a sadist's toy.
Yeah, I know. Jack in the Box. So then it's never too late to try to engage that particular desire in Krishna's service. There's always a way to engage a desire in Krishna's service. I mean, some things may be a little too late. I was thinking the other day, I really wanted to be a pilot. I mean, I did fly a plane before, but I'd like to fly a jet, you know. It's too late. I had that desire anyway, and it's too late. You know, because I was thinking if I had my own plane, I could go everywhere and preach, and I wouldn't worry about the coronavirus.
Yeah.
But it's too late. Too late for me. I don't think they allow any 72-year-old pilots at this point.
So of course we understand that you're joking about your desire, but let's say, you know, someone who is not so fixed up in Krishna consciousness faces that at 72 or whatever, and they want to be a pilot and they just can't give it up. Then what happens?
You ever heard of a mosquito?
Yes, Gurudev.
That's a joke. They get to pilot a mosquito body in the temple. So
I can offend devotees more?
No. So they can fulfill in the next life, or they can buy Microsoft Flight Simulator. And learn how to fly a plane, get all the accoutrements that go along with your computer. I mean, there's a way to dovetail almost anything. So we just have to figure out what specifically it is. And then there's always, I would say 99% of the time, there's a way to dovetail it in Krishna service. But that, you know, one has to deal with it. If one has been suppressing things, one has to deal with those particular modes of nature and understand the needs behind it. Not necessarily the desires. This gets a little more technical. There are needs behind every desire. And sometimes the desire is not fulfilled, cannot be fulfilled for one reason or other. But the need that the desire was based on can be fulfilled in a different way. So you have to think outside the box.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Okay, hope that answers the question. One more question from our fans in internet land. Any other questions? Everyone else is quiet today.
Gurudev.
Yeah, oh no, the same question from you. What do you do if you have bad association? That's Pranesh's question.
Yeah. No, Gurudev. My question is like, lust is the origin of greed and anger.
Yeah, your internet went down. What about greed and anger?
Yeah.
How do you use it? You become
greedy. Like lust is the origin.
I think you become greedy for Krishna. There's a way to dovetail all that. You become greedy, you want to do more and more for Krishna. Like Prabhupada, he wanted more and more books distributed. He was greedy for that. He wanted I was listening to a class this morning. Prabhupada said, we say we want more and more money. We can use unlimited money in Krishna's service to serve Krishna, not for ourselves. So generally, you have to focus on doing something for Krishna. Like if you really want to be famous, then be famous to glorify Krishna. Dovetail that in Krishna's service. Practically anything could be dovetailed in Krishna's service. But you have to understand the underlying need behind that, not necessarily the specific desire. Okay, it is time to say goodbye.
Gurudev, one more question.
Oh, yes, Sudharma. Yeah.
Please accept my humble obeisances. This thing with our intelligence and our mind, using the vivek, the higher intelligence, more often it happens that we've done something and then this kind of the whole thinking comes back later on. Hey, I wish I had done this. Like, how do we sort of, you know, get out of this kind of things that, like, not thoughts?
I think that's all right. I think it's all right to think, I wish I had done this instead of that. I mean, repentance is purification. Prabhupada actually said that. If one repents and feels bad that they had done something, then you learn from that. We all make mistakes. Actually, the greatest people in this world make the most mistakes. That's why it must be great. Anyway, so the greatest people in this world make the most mistakes, but they learn from their mistakes.
Yes.
Without making mistakes, you don't make any progress. Yeah, so it's important to stick your neck out. I mean, you see, Prabhupada, I'm not saying Prabhupada made mistakes, but Prabhupada stuck his neck out, and many times he really had a hard time, like that program in Jhansi. There's so many things that Prabhupada had a hard time, but he took risks. Prabhupada always talks about taking risks.
Taking risks.
So, you know, risk is there. And in our personal lives, we may make mistakes, but we learn from it. I mean, sometimes I treat a devotee too harshly. And I just learn from it. I said, I did that. Shouldn't have done that. Okay. Check and balance. I learned from my mistake. Krishna, forgive me. And we should learn. That's important. Okay. On that happy note, thank you. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Bye Bye, Hasta La Vista, Sunyuar Zisan, Ki Jai.